Chapters. What I'm going to go over is not so much what's in Prabhupada's purpose, because it's not going to be something different from Prabhupada's purpose, because you can always read the purpose, but just ideas that connect some of the different verses together. As I said yesterday, it's not that Krishna is talking, that this is verse 1, this is verse 2, this is verse 3, this is chapter 1, this is chapter. Krishna and Arjuna were actually having a conversation. And Krishna very systematically was explaining about the science of devotional service to Arjuna, or the philosophy which would help Arjuna overcome his bewilderment. The ninth chapter is very similar to the seventh chapter. Practically the same themes are in the ninth chapter that are in the seventh chapter. The difference is that the seventh and eighth chapters deal with devotional service, but the ninth chapter deals with pure unalloyed devotional service. The first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, they deal with knowledge, and which is more or less the difference between matter and spirit, and the process by which one is able to understand what is the difference between ourselves and the body, beginning with karma yoga. That is dutiful action. Dutiful action means that the material world works according to sacrifice, and that everyone is supposed to do their duty to help that sacrifice. By performing sacrifice, the kings in the ancient times used to satisfy the demigods, and the demigods would supply rain. Not only rain, but the sunlight, the air, would be provided in the proper quantities at the proper time. The seasons would be regulated. Even here in Bengal, maybe, I don't know what it's like now, but at least when I first came 30 years ago, a little bit longer than that, that they told me that the monsoons were to the day. They knew exactly what day the monsoons would stop. And that was 30 years ago, what to speak of, when people were more pious and they were performing sacrifices. They knew when the monsoons would start, when they'd stop, that the seasons were quite regulated. as it says in the time of Ugrasen, Emperor Ugrasen, that if the father lived longer than his son, then there would be some question about what was the piety of the king. If it was too cold or too hot, the king would be held responsible. I don't think it's like that in modern society. People don't know why it's too hot or too cold. The heads of the government, they're only held responsible if the economic, if the GP, gross national product, is going up or down. Other than that, people don't care what they do. But by the performance of sacrifice, everything would be provided. Everything meaning the sunlight, the air, the rain, even the jewels would be supplied, fresh water, and therefore people had real opulence. Real opulence means clean water, fresh air, nice food, nice relationships, peaceful life. That's real material opulence. That if you have $100 billion, but you can't get anything good to eat, you're eating some dead animal left over from the last war. And if the air you're breathing is contaminated, you have to live in an air-conditioned environment, you're drinking bottled water, and you're on your third or fourth husband or wife, then what? And you have so many kids that you don't even know what their names are anymore. You don't even know where they are. Then what kind of opulence, what is the good of your money? Even a rabbit has a better life than you do. At least a rabbit has the same family all the time. Probably knows where there's some clean water and fresh air. Doesn't have to live in the city making a living. Doesn't need a PhD to survive. Therefore, real opulence is supplied by the demigods, and that comes about because of sacrifice. And everyone had their part to play in the sacrifice. The Shudras would assist, get the ingredients. The Vaishyas would supply the ingredients for the sacrifice, such as ghee and grains. The Kshatriyas would gather the ingredients together. They arranged the sacrifice, and the Brahmins would perform it. And the demigods and Krishna were satisfied, and everything was supplied. Therefore, everyone participated, prescribed duties. So that's called Karma Yoga. And other than that, it's called Vikarma. And then there is called Jnana Yoga. After performing the sacrifices, one would develop faith that there are higher powers. And that if I perform the right sacrifices, then I get a result. If I go to the Brahmin priest, I give him some dakshin, a donation, he performs some sacrifice. Then if there's some problem in my health, or there's some problem in the wealth, there's some problem, then the because of the performance of that sacrifice, therefore I get cure of the disease, or there would be some economic development, whatever was necessary. Therefore, people develop faith that the sacrifices work. Because like now, people have faith that the scientists have some ability because they can make computers or cars or airplanes. They can't clean the air, they can't give us fresh water, they can't give us nice relationships, they can't do anything practical, but they can do things that people are impressed by, because they're people in this age are fools. They don't know what actually is the necessities of life. They don't care what they eat, most people. As long as it doesn't move, they eat it. They don't care what kind, just like McDonald's hamburgers. They don't know actually what they're eating. They don't know what part of the body that was killed, or what kind of body they're eating. Could be a horse, could be a pig, could be a cow, could be someone's finger got caught in the machine. They don't care. That happens sometimes, actually. But then,
in Singapore, they don't have enough water. They're using the sewage water and reproduce it for people to drink. And
yeah.
They call it green water.
Yeah, I mean, there was a book called In America written about the slaughterhouses, and they mentioned in the book that sometimes people got caught in machines and got ground up.
I don't know,
is that book? Yeah, Sinclair. Yeah. But they just sort, you know, they could differentiate between the person that got ground up and everyone else, so they just served it out. Yeah, the rat stool. There's something like 3% that's allowed in hamburgers and other kinds of meat like that, hot dogs, rat stool, and sawdust, and things like that. Yeah, cockroach. Well, that's not a cockroach. Good old cockroach. You got to pay extra for that. That makes it more crunchy. In Korea, they have these stands. You know, just like they sell pretzels in America, I don't know if they do that in Europe, they have this glass case, and people go and they sell pretzels on the street during the winter. There's some mustard. So in Korea, they sell live cockroaches. People go by and they pick out the cockroach and bite off his head and just chew it right there. Big ones, so they have real big ones. Flying dates, we used to call them. But that's what people, because they're so bewildered, they don't realize that what is actually the value of what they're working for. So because they're performing vikarma rather than sacrifices, they wind up eating all kinds of abominable foods and drinking all kinds of things which are contaminated. Just like here in West Bengal, many people are dying because of arsenic poisoning. Because they've ran out of water, because they've polluted the water, contaminated the water so much. Just like the Ganges is so contaminated. There's so much water here, but they've contaminated so much people can't drink it. They had to dig tube wells into the earth, and they sucked out all the water from the earth, and it got contaminated with arsenic. So people started drinking water which is contaminated with arsenic. So this is all due to vikarma or sinful activities, due to lack of sacrifice. But those who perform the sacrifices get the result. They develop faith in the Brahmin priest, the process of sacrifice, and therefore they gradually develop faith in the Vedic literature. It's not that the faith that people had faith in the scriptures, blind faith. No, the faith was there because it worked. Just like people have faith in the scientists, whatever little they can do, because they can do practical things. They say that when you add oxygen and hydrogen together in a certain amount, two parts of oxygen, but one part of hydrogen, you can produce water. So they can do it in a demonstrable way. Previously, by the expert Brahmins who learned how to pronounce the Vedic mantras, they could produce results consistently. It was a science. And therefore, people had faith in the Vedic priests, and they had faith in the Vedic scriptures, which were the directions by which the Vedic priests worked. And then they hear about, by reading the Vedas, that there are higher planets, that the demigods were the ones who were supplying the necessities of life. And if you perform the right sacrifices, you could go to the heavenly planets. So naturally, people would want to go to the heavenly planets, and they perform the sacrifices. And sometimes at the more elaborate sacrifices, even the demigods would personally come. So it wasn't just a matter of faith, it was a matter of experience, you know, blind faith, it was a matter of experience. And inherently the idea that you could go to the heavenly planets was also the idea that we're different from the body. Because after all, who's going to the heavenly planets? It's not the body that's going there, it's the soul. So in that way, people develop faith in the soul, that we're actually spiritual beings and they get direct experience of it. And then, reading further, they come upon the Gyanakar in this section, that there's a process, if you follow it, a little bit more difficult, but if you follow it, you can become liberated from the bodily concept of life. And then some of them would follow it, they become great mystics and sages, they develop mystic powers, people would see those mystic powers, they had further faith in the Vedic literature because they saw practical persons who had practical abilities and experience that the Vedas described. And then ultimately the goal was described as going back to the spiritual world, becoming a pure devotee. And this way, there are devotees, Vaishnavas, they travel and tell people about the Veda, you know, about the goal of life being going back to the spiritual world. And people had faith because they had faith in the scriptures. Nowadays, we don't have Brahmin priests. We don't have sacrifices. We don't have so many, you know, we don't have the experience of persons with mystic powers or liberated souls. Therefore, basically speaking, faith in the Vedic literature is not very much because people don't have experience of the demigods. They don't have experience of the way rain is being delivered because there's not that direct experience. For that reason, Harinam Sankirtan is the only thing that's recommended in this age. And that's supposed to produce a result. The result is it's supposed to increase our consciousness. We're supposed to be able to experience the difference between ordinary consciousness and Krishna consciousness. Therefore, in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins with Idam tu te guyatamam pravaksham anushuyave jnana vijnanam asayitam yajgyatam moshase shubha. So here he uses the word yajgyatam moshase shubha. Become free from the miseries of material existence, namely our hankering and lamentation. Generally, we take to devotional service because we want something. We want freedom from distress. We want some security. We want some material remuneration. So Krishna says, yes, if you take to devotional service, there's some misery that's taken away. Insecurity, material afflictions. For instance, the devotees, they eat regular food, they get up at regular times, they follow some principles, and that automatically takes away some of the distress of irregularity. Material disease is mostly due to irregularity, disease. We don't know what's going to happen next, or what our senses and mind are going to dictate to us, what's going to be the next thing we do. But by some regulation, automatically there's freedom from distress, there's some development of intelligence. What is the actual purpose of life? What are the necessities of material life? The karma is just like people, karma is vikarma. The people in general, they don't even know what the necessities of life are. So they'll go and get intoxicated, and they'll forget to eat. Some people are so intoxicated, they don't even know they're hungry for days. They get malnutrition, and then they come out of it, they're completely in a daze, they can't even work. They can't do anything. They're just like become like vegetables. When I first became a devotee, before I became a devotee, in the 60s, they discovered LSD, although it wasn't very common. But LSD wasn't enough, they came out with something called STP. The idea was, you can get divine experience by LSD. So they wanted to get something more powerful than LSD. They thought the experience would be more powerful. So they came out with something called STD. And that was supposed to be 1,000 times more powerful than LSD. So people took it, and after taking it, they were on a permanent hallucination. For the rest of it, they're still hallucinating to this day. You know, they walk in, and wherever they are, the floors were caving in, the walls were melting, and colors were floating by, and everyone had four heads and three arms. That was their reality. So needless to say, their ability to work productively in this world was not very high. Because they couldn't walk, they were afraid to take a step forward because they were afraid the ground would cave in. So that's the future of the material. That's the future society. It's not like that happened in the 60s and now everyone is a purified personality. Now I think people are more on chemicals than they were then. And even those who aren't official chemicals, like LSD or hashish, whatever they have, ecstasy, whatever they have now. But everyone else is on coffee and cigarettes and alcohol. Everyone's intoxicated, or sleeping pills, or method dream or methadone. Everyone's on some kind of chemical. Just to meet the world every day, they have to take so many chemicals. And from the material point of view, they're not very productive. Or even if they are productive, what is the value of their production? They're producing plastic toys for children, video games. And persons who are really productive, they're the ones who are running the slaughterhouses, making tobacco, cigarettes, alcohol. And if you really want to make money, then pornography. Very few people are producing anything of any value whatsoever. Maybe a few people are making, you know, producing some food, which is all mass-produced and has no nutritional value. And other people are building buildings that are going to collapse in a few years, so they can build more buildings. As far as the real necessities of life, hardly anyone even knows what they are. They don't know that the most basic necessity of life is to eat. So Krishna says it frees us from misery because gradually we become sane. A little sanity, a little understanding of reality. And he says because you're not envious of him. So here again Krishna is asking us to hear from him, but we can only hear if we're not envious of Krishna. And of course we hear from Krishna's devotees who are thinking that these persons are separated from Krishna. Although no one's really separated from Krishna, we're thinking that we're hearing from some particular personality. But the fact is that those who repeat Krishna's message, anyone, doesn't matter what your title is, male, female, old, young, anyone who's repeating Krishna's message, they're doing so on behalf of Krishna. Krishna is the actual deliverer of the message. The devotee is simply the instrument. The devotee is simply agreeing to act as Krishna's instrument, and the less we interfere with Krishna's desire, then the better instrument we become, that's all. But no one in this material world is doing anything independently, because none of us are doing anything, really. We're simply desiring. And we can desire to fulfill Krishna's desire, or we can desire something other than Krishna's desire. One who thinks that, or becomes envious, they can't hear, because that's the nature of envy. If we think we know more than the speaker does, or we think we've understood everything, whatever the reason is, whatever our consciousness, we won't be able to hear unless we're humble and submissive. But we can't be humble and submissive if we don't like the person we're hearing from, for whatever reason. We think we're hearing from some individual personality, or if we take the individual personality as more important than the message, we won't be able to hear anything. And if we don't hear, then we don't know what to do. And if we don't know what to do, then we'll do the wrong thing. Therefore, if we commit offense against the devotee, some of our intelligence is blocked, and therefore we're sure to do something wrong. It may not be so spectacular. Sometimes we think, well, I committed offense against these devotees and nothing really unusual happened to me. I didn't walk down the block and lightning appeared, the lightning bolt and struck me. So I think I got away with it. I offended those devotees and nothing happened. They weren't really devotees anyhow. Or they were just ordinary devotees. It wasn't a pure devotee. But the result is something important will happen to us, like we'll overeat, or we'll oversleep, or we'll forget something. Something like that will happen to us. So, and that will cause us problems. Because it's not that our philosophy is so, you know, difficult. But it becomes very difficult. We miss the basic things. If we offend the devotees, we may think, I've understood so much profound philosophy. I may be able to quote so many verses and everyone's thinking I'm a great personality, but I can't avoid overeating or oversleeping or controlling my mind or senses. And that's the result of offenses. So therefore Krishna says, because you're not envious of me. So offenses are caused by envy, envy is that somehow or another I have the wrong attitude towards the devotees, especially. Instead of thinking myself to be their servant, I'm critical of them. Or I'm thinking about how I can better them. I can do better than they are. Somehow or another, my attitude is not a service attitude. And Krishna says, because you're not envious, therefore I'll tell you the knowledge. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he's written the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and at the end he says, I've explained the most brilliant, very sophisticated knowledge. Hare Krishna. I've explained to you very elaborate, sophisticated knowledge all about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So what about the non-devotees? Well, how will they perceive this? How will they take it? And Krishna asked Kaviraj Goswami, says, there's no problem, because even they hear it, they won't understand anything I said. So even if unless we have the right attitude, we can hear, but we won't understand anything. Or we may understand very little, or we'll understand it in the wrong way. One time I asked Srila Prabhupada, I said, Srila Prabhupada, if Krishna wants me to do something, or if Krishna doesn't want me to do something, how will I know what Krishna wants me to do? And Prabhupada smiled at me, he started to laugh. He said, you won't know what to do. He said, you'll do the wrong thing. Then he started to laugh. Yes?
It's also the meat eaters, they can understand Bhagavad Gita because
of the mind of sacrifice. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita says, basically the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is that all the Vyantides are Krishna servants. All of them. It's not like the mosquito who's biting me, he's not a servant of Krishna. Instead, he's something else. But actually, it's a little, just like we're in this big body, we're the passenger, so he's in a little body as the passenger. And the super soul. So what to speak of killing an animal like a cow, if one can't understand that the cow is the mother, you're not supposed to kill the cow, you're supposed to protect it, then how can you understand Bhagavad Gita? How are you going to understand that Krishna is a coward boy? You'll think Krishna has this is in the spiritual world, this is a slaughterhouse, and Krishna is raising the cows. It's a big slaughterhouse in the spiritual world. Go there and eat steak. Mother DeSoto has a barbecue every Sunday. How can you understand the philosophy that we're all souls, spiritual beings, and that the human beings are supposed to protect the lower species? Therefore, Krishna says, because you're never envious of me, Arjuna, I'll explain this most confidential knowledge, and therefore also the process of realization, the process of devotional service, jnana and vijnana. By knowing which, you become relieved of the miseries of material existence. You'll get out of the material concept of life and enter into the spiritual concept. And then in the next verse, Krishna praises the process of devotional service that he's going to explain. He says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitra Midamutamam, Pravakshavagamam Dharma, Sisukam Kartam Adhya. And Prabhupada has a very elaborate purport explaining about the glories of devotional service. So although devotional service is very easy, actually, as I mentioned yesterday, it means we just have to do something to please Krishna. We have to do some activity that Krishna wants us to do, and do it with love, enthusiasm. That's called devotional service, of which there are 9 different processes. So Krishna praises what he's about to speak of, saying that Raja Vidya is the king of knowledge. We may learn so many things, but if we don't know that thing, then we're in ignorance. Raja Guyam, it's the most secret of all secrets, because it's beyond even the fact that we're not the body. People in general can't understand the difference between themselves and their body, or themselves and their mind, but to speak of Paramatma, which is, that's just ordinary knowledge. Guyam and Guyatara and Guyatama. Guyatama means the most confidential knowledge, is that we're all Krishna's servants, loving servants. And that our real position is just to do something out of love for Krishna. That's life, that's existence. Beyond that, it's simply an imagination, it's a dream. It's a dream where we imagine ourselves to be the hero or the heroine in some imaginary play that we've concocted, imaginary role that we've concocted in this material world, and people are playing it out, thinking themselves to be this or that. But actually they don't change their real identity, they always remain Krishna Das, or Krishna Dasi. Therefore, it is the most secret of all the secrets. Although it's an open secret, Krishna wants to reveal it, but Maya keeps us in such a state of consciousness that it seems very mysterious. It seems very unusual that I am the soul, I'm Krishna's servant. It seems that that's almost like a fairy tale, and that what we're going through now is reality. What we don't realize is that what we're going through is a fairy tale, and that's reality. That we have a different identity. The spiritual identity is Krishna's servant. And that when we realize what our identity is, that's when we begin our real life again. That this life is just a dream.
Yeah. In another purpose complex refers to a phrase called Gita Hasan.
The Hasan.
Yeah, the Gita, I don't want to misquote Bhagavad Gita, the Lord said, there's a great secret in the Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna reveals. And then he probably uses that word Gita.
Oh, so, and you know.
You know, is that what you're talking about?
No, it's. We'll quote it from the second verse of the ninth chapter. Where Krishna Guyam is secret. Like cave, mysterious cave. Guyam, I think, means actually cave. It means a secret. Raja Vidyavid Raja Guyam Pavitram Vagmam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Adhyam. So Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram is the purest. Well, it's pure because it has nothing to do with the contaminations of this material world, this hankering lamentation. Vidram idam uttamam pravaksha vagamam dharma. It gives one direct perception of ourselves, of our real selves, and things as they really are. Just by offering something out of love for Krishna, everything is revealed, as Krishna said, as we become Krishna conscious. Everything is revealed just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Pravaksha Dharma, or Pravaksham, gives three qualities. One of them is, it gives direct perception of Krishna. We directly experience Krishna. And at the same time, we become detached from things that are not related, some ideas of these that are not related to Krishna. For activities that are not related to Krishna. And at the same time, we develop our feelings of attraction towards Krishna or love. Pravaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Adhyam. And because we engage our senses in Krishna's service, therefore it's joyfully performed. We don't have to sit looking at our navel trying to fix our minds on Krishna. We can also engage our senses in Krishna's service and eat pizza and lasagna and offer to Krishna and dance and chant, hear about Krishna. We can engage so many activities in Krishna's service, therefore it's joyful. At the same time, think of Krishna. After praising devotional service, and Krishna says, Asha Dadana Purusha Dharma Syatya Parandapa Aprapyaman Vivartate Mrityu Samsara Vartana. Those who don't seriously take the Krishna service, they also have to come back to repeated birth and death. Even when we're in the process of devotional service, still we have to take it seriously. And taking it seriously means we have to develop faith in the scriptures. We have to understand in detail what the scriptures are saying so that we develop a spiritual vision about things. It has to be so profound that whatever we see through the scripture. Even if we don't see directly by realization, but at least we have to come to the platform as seen through the eyes of Shastra. that in the background of all living entities we have to see the soul and the super soul, and we have to see things according to the modes of nature and according to the different ways that the Shastras are explained in the scriptures. Then we can develop faith, and faith meaning experience. We can know what to do to please Krishna, and we can become fixed in Krishna's service, knowing what Krishna wants us to do, and doing that enthusiastically to please Him. Those who have faith in the process of devotional service but don't see very clearly through Shastra, they're second class, and those who have no vision whatsoever, practically speaking, they're simply officially following the process due to association or for some reason, they're known as third class. First class means we actually understand things correctly. We see things clearly through Shastra, and therefore we don't really hate anyone or any living entity. We see everyone as Krishna's servant. That's not so difficult. We're not either hankering to enjoy or exploit others, nor do we hate them, the fact that we can't exploit or enjoy them. Yes?
Does that mean we also see how they're affected by the modes of nature?
Yeah, see everything. See everything. You see how the souls are sleeping, or how they're active for sense enjoyment, or you see how they're in awareness or awakening, or you see how they're spiritually aware. So one sees that, but it's the soul. Now the souls are conditioned by different environments in the material world, material environments. Then Krishna says that now, all right, I've explained to you that there are different types of, you know, that the glories of devotional service, I've explained that there are different persons on different levels who are performing devotional service. Now Krishna puts in his disclaimer in the next verses, that you can't blame me for the material world, as people are very prone to do. That I'm in this particular situation because somehow or another Krishna doesn't like me. He likes that person, or somehow or another Krishna's letting that person get away with so much, but he's not letting me get away with anything. He's playing favorites. But Krishna puts in a disclaimer, Maya Katamidam Saravam Jagada Vyaktamorathina Matstani Sarabhutani Na Chaham Te Shivashitaha Achama Stani Bhutani Paishame Yoga Maishnaram Bhuta Purana Chabhuta Sto Mamatma Bhuta Bhavanaha Kata Kashos Kitoni Pyam Vayu Sarvatrigo Mahan Kata Sarvani Bhutani Matstani Tipadari. Basically speaking, Krishna says, everything is my energies. I've expanded my energies everywhere. There's nothing but my energies. And they're all acting under my control. But still, I'm not part of it. Just like Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example, the king is sitting on his throne, and as long as he's on the throne, all the ministers are doing their work. Because the king's there. If the king was assassinated, there would be a whole new set of ministers. But as long as the king's there, although the king may not be doing anything, still all the ministers are working. So because Krishna is present, therefore all his energies are working. But still Krishna is not directly involved. Then Krishna says, Sara Bhutani Kuntiya Prakriti Antimamikam Kalpashaya Punastani Kalpado Vishijamyaha Bhutugramam Prakriti Swamavashtabhya Vishijamy Punakuna Bhutugramam Imam Kritsnam Avashtam Prakritira Vashat. Not only this little experience we have, but whole universes are being manifested by Krishna. Again and again they're being manifested, and again they're all being annihilated, and Krishna is not at all interfering with anything that's going on. He's simply providing all the ingredients, he's providing the laws of nature, everything necessary for the playground of the conditioned souls. But Krishna says, Nachama Stani Karmani Nivana Didanandaya Udasina Advasina Masakam Tesha Karmasa, that all this is taking place, and it's all under my control, it's all my energies that are happening, but still I'm aloof, just like the judge. Someone may come before the judge and he may condemn the person to death. another person comes before the judge and gives him a huge amount of wealth. But it's not that the judge is condemning someone to death because he doesn't like his face. He says, you're going to die because I don't like the way you look. And the next person, he said, oh, you have a happy face, I'll give you $10 million. No, it's all pointing to the activities of the persons who come before him, whether they're rewarded or punished. Those who perform pious activities are rewarded. Those who perform sinful activities, they're punished. So Krishna is aloof, but he's neutral, and he set up material nature in such a way it works equally towards everyone. And according to one's desires and activities, one gets rewarded or punished. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sucharashram hetuna nena kuntiya jagati parivartita. So Maya, by me, Adi, above, Aksha, eyes. So by me, above everything, I'm seeing, Krishna says. I'm seeing everything from above, and therefore Krishna is the supervisor of everything. But he's not part of it. He sees what's going on, therefore he awards and punishes. But he's neutral. By adakshena prakriti, by his energy, under his direction, it's working, producing the moving, non-moving, living beings, and it's all by its rule, the rules of material nature. The rule of material nature is, if you act piously, if you act according to Krishna's directions, you get elevated. You act impiously, contrary to Krishna's directions, acting as if you're the lord of nature, you're the enjoyer, and you exploit the resource of material nature and the living entities here, you're punished for it. Then Krishna says, Abhijananti mamuda manishintanam ashvitya param bhava majanato mamabhuta maheshwar. That the fools, they deride me when I come like a human being. They think I'm a human being like they are, under the control of the modes of nature. That Gandhi went to prison, as a material example that Prabhupada uses, and all the prisoners, they thought, oh, Gandhi, he's also a prisoner like we are. Or sometimes the king, they go to the prison to see how the inmates are doing, and all the inmates are thinking that now the king has become a prisoner like we are, because he's in the prison. But he's above the prison. But he sometimes may visit the prison. Certainly Krishna visits the prison of material nature, but he never becomes part of the prison. He doesn't become a prisoner. But those who are mudhas, they think Krishna is just like they are, an ordinary person who is under the control of the modes of nature. Avijananti mam buddha manushin tanum ashitya param bhavam ajananto. Ajananto, they have no knowledge. Mamabhudamheshram, they don't know him as the supreme lord of everything that's happening. Therefore, one who Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura says that Krishna is in the heart of all living entities. If we don't respect all living entities, but we try to worship Krishna in the temple, then we'll be wasting our time. Because every temple, every body is actually a temple for Vishnu. In every body there's a Supreme Lord, and we should offer respect to every body just like we offer respect to the deity in the temple. Because how we respect the different living entities depends upon their material position. The way we respect the tiger in the zoo may be different than we respect a preacher of Krishna consciousness. We may touch the feet of a preacher and ask for blessings. That may be showing respect to the super soul and the soul in the heart of the preacher, but we shouldn't go to the zoo and break into the cage and offer vases to the tiger and touch its paws and ask for forgiveness for any offense we may have made in the past. So the thing is, it was just an ordinary tiger. That's we have to have some discrimination how to appropriately treat all living entities. When Krishna had the Govardhan Puj, he told his father to distribute prasadam to everyone, to all the persons there. But first he fed the Brahmins, then he fed the men and women and children. Then he fed all the other orders of life. Then he fed the triangulars, and then he fed the dogs also. But it wasn't that he thought, oh, everyone's just equal. No, that's a mistake. Because although everyone will be equal, but Krishna has set up a system of etiquette and discrimination. Oh, therefore we should have the discrimination how to follow Krishna's system of etiquette for elevation. Those who are more elevated than we are, we have to respect them. Otherwise, we won't be able to hear from them how to become more elevated. But more elevated means that they have to be—they have more consciousness, more vision. How everyone is on the same level. So those who are on the same level, see everyone on the same level, they have to be respected more, although they're not attached to it. But that way, the people on a lower level are able to gain the knowledge by which they're able to see everyone on the same level. But those who are artificial proclaim that everyone is on the same level, therefore I have to be treated special. I have to be treated special. Yeah, everyone is on the same level, so I come first. Just like I was about to take Charanamrita a couple of days ago, and someone cut in front of me, took Charanamrita, and then he proclaimed to the persons who were a little agitated, who were handing out the Charanamrita, that everyone's on the same level. Why are you getting so excited? Everyone's the same. So that's a misunderstanding. What it means that everyone is on the same level, but not everyone realizes that. And there's a process of realizing it, which means we have to become humble. We have to follow the etiquette. But Krishna says they fools, they don't even respect Krishna. They take him as just an ordinary person. They can't even respect Krishna. What to speak of anyone else? And what is the result? Mogaisha moga karmano moga jnani chekasa rakshasi maskrim chayva prakriti momani shritaha. Whatever they're doing will be a failure. If they're looking for liberation, mogaisha moga karmano. If they want the results of their fruit of activities, pious activities, they won't get it. If they deride Krishna. If they want liberation, they won't get liberation. If they want knowledge, they won't get knowledge. Whatever they're looking for, if they deride Krishna, they won't get it. Because everything depends upon proper relations with Krishna. And who does make progress? Mahatmanas tumam partha, daivim pratadimam shikya, vajanya nanya manaso gyatam buddhidev avyam. The great souls, the Mahatmas, the great Atmas, they're under the protection of Daivi Prakriti. They're following Srimati Radharani's directions. They're not committing aparads, activities against the worship of Srimati Radharani, whose desire is that Krishna be happy. Srimati Radharani is not a very complicated person. She doesn't have to go to a psychiatrist or anything like that. She only has one desire, to please Krishna. And those who take shelter of Srimati Radharani try to do something to please Krishna, they come under her protection. The internal energy, Ladini Shakti, Tit Shakti, they can see everything clearly. And those who don't, they're under the protection of the external energy. And then everything becomes very confusing, complicated, difficult to understand. And what is the process of taking shelter of the internal energy? Please Srimati Radharani. How do we please Krishna? Satyatam kirtiyanto mam hitantas chadrida vrataha namasyantas shumam bhaktya nikyuta upasate. We don't have to do something spectacular. All we do is have to sincerely from the core of our hearts, like the gopis who are churning butter. It wasn't that the gopis were doing some spectacular service in the sense of producing big, big results for Krishna. Maybe they only produced, you know, a couple of cups of curd every day. They didn't have to have their names read out, you know. Andrew Lake produced 3 ounces of curd today. And Sue Davey produced 4 grams of curd. Wow, I can't believe it. No, they're simply, whatever they're doing, is from the core of the heart to please Krishna. And that's what really pleases Krishna. Yes.
You mentioned earlier that we can use our senses in service of Krishna, like offering a pizza.
Well, that's an extreme example.
Well, but it happens.
I sure have, it's quite a bit.
So, is that pleasing to Krishna in any way?
Maybe, something. It's better than eating other things. But really, it's not that Krishna particularly likes pizza. I don't think when we get back to the spiritual world we'll find very, very many pizza offerings. You know, there's a special room that Mother Jasoda has for the Italian spiritual food. Little Italy in the spiritual world. Can I get some water? Oh, here we got some. But Krishna is impressed by if it's offered with love, and it's made actually to please him. Not with thinking, oh, you know, prasadam in the temple is so, you know, spicy. I don't like it, but pizza, oh, all right. I'll get a break from the let's enjoy. So if we take it in the spirit of enjoyment, if it's cooked in the spirit of enjoyment, then it's not, how can Krishna be pleased? If we're thinking it's an offering to be, the sacrifice is made to the fire of my stomach.
But how can it go together? Because we are making pizza instead of something else like rice and dal. And, because we want to, because it's satisfying our senses, then.
Doesn't go together very well.
Yeah.
If we're thinking, if it's, but we have to add Krishna to it. We, at least, as a matter of duty, we offer it to Krishna. We hope that Krishna enjoys it too. And in that way, we develop some attachment. At least we're offering things, first we offer things to Krishna. But there is some possibility, for instance, that I live in Italy and that's our traditional food, so that's what we offer to Krishna. And Krishna, and if it's done in devotion, it is possible to think, I mean, Krishna, I'm sure he does like pizza. Why not? We like pizza, why wouldn't Krishna like it? It's not his favorite food, I don't think. Because we don't find the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya had his Italian day, ravioli, lasagna. It may be there, but I haven't read it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I've only seen there's a book, there's a song. But Krishna can't, but he, I mean, if we enjoy it, then why wouldn't Krishna enjoy it? So we can offer it to Krishna with the idea of pleasing him. And we can eat it with the idea of pleasing him also. That Krishna is so kind, he's given us this food, and it's not different from him. We're associating with him by eating it, and I'm going to use the energy to serve him. And if we remember Krishna, if we're eating in a relationship with Krishna, then it is, it's devotional service. Because Krishna is there. The attitude of service to Krishna, trying to please Krishna is there. Then the attitude itself makes it devotional. And if we eat even the most nicely prepared prasadam, directly served to the deities, prepared to the, but if we eat it in the idea of that for our personal enjoyment, then it's not. For us, it won't be with the spiritual. It's a question of consciousness.
So it's like the same for like when we change service because it's more satisfying us than.
You mean our conditioned personality?
Yeah. Then like cleaning the toilet. So we can. It's possible, to also do that and
speaking to Krishna. But in the back of our minds, we'll always think, I'm not really self-surrendered.
Yeah.
That will be there also in our consciousness, that I didn't really want to do just what's pleasing to Krishna. Mm-hmm. I want to do this for Krishna. So there's some conditioning there. So, but we'll make progress. we'll get some taste for remembering Krishna. And the more we make progress towards remembering Krishna and trying to do something to please him, then we'll become aloof from the particular activity, because we realize the essence of it is just pleasing Krishna. That if Krishna is pleased, if I remember Krishna, then what does it matter what I'm doing?
So when we just continue, that gets purified.
Yeah. We do it for Krishna, to please him. We do it properly. Yes.
Sometimes we justify ourselves that we're doing it for pleasure of Krishna. That's what this happens.
We're doing what?
We intend to justify our action we're doing.
Therefore, it should be authorized. So the idea of authority should be there. Now we have this idea of authority of well, we don't have a very clear idea of authority of his kind right now, to be honest. Yeah, because we don't have any job description for our authorities. We don't know what they're supposed to do. We don't have any job description. Yeah, we don't know. There's no assessment, so we never find out if anyone's really doing any what they're doing, what they're supposed to do. The only thing we have is some vague concept of the guru, that you're the person you're supposed to surrender to. That's what we have, but we see that most of that is sentiment also. I'm surrendered to my guru as long as he doesn't get too out of line. Ask me to do something that's too extreme. Be too surrendered. He steps over this line, I smile, I can't hear it, a word he's saying. I just turn off, tune out. So as long as he's friendly, then I'm surrendered. But that wasn't that. That's not only due to the devotees, the following. It's also due to the fact that we don't have any clear understanding. In other words, just like even with Prabhupada, it's not that everyone was surrendered to Prabhupada. Even they understood that there was, Prabhupada was in a certain level of devotion, but they also understood their limits. But at least they had faith, to some extent, that Prabhupada, whatever he was talking about, whatever he was telling others to do, he was realized. That he was on a level where he could understand what people were actually supposed to do. Generally, people didn't question Prabhupada whether he was giving the right instructions or not. And if they did, they weren't in the society for very long. But I don't think there's no clear understanding who's on what level. In other words, I may have some sense of duty towards my spiritual master that I'm supposed to follow, but I'm not really 100% sure that he's giving me the right directions. Because sometimes I may be clear that the person's giving me the right directions. It may not be clear. Depends upon who he is or what their directions are. I'm not so sure if the GBC, if the temple president, if my best friend or my mind, I'm not really sure, 100% sure, that this is really what I'm supposed to be doing. Therefore, the line of authority is not very clear within our society, and that creates kind of an anarchistical society, which we presently have. Few people are dedicated, because for whatever reason, their past activities, their piety, or their secure, whatever reason, many devotees are skeptical. They're not really quite sure. They're not really so determined or convinced. And the symptom of that is that the essential activities the Prabhupada put forward, right, that our movement is supposed to be dedicated to, like book distribution, Gurukul, farm communities, Harinam, whatever, food is prasadam distribution. The essential activities, those have diminished for the most part. And we've substituted some of the other things. Whatever, that's all right. We've substituted so many things for it. Mostly, you know, people going to getting education at the university, becoming a sociologist, coming to the temple once a week, their offering, or once a year for Janmashtami, or other types of things. it's not really so important to follow four legal principles. Three is good enough. No meat, no fish, no eggs. If you follow those principles, you're doing quite well. At least on Friday, you can do it. So we've become a little deviated. We've forgotten what the essential things are. What will actually help us always remember Krishna and never forget him in the mood of devotion. But that Lord Chaitanya actually has a mission. And the mission isn't whatever we make it. We can't make up a new mission. He does have a mission, a purpose. And Prabhupada was able to fulfill that purpose through very specific activities, and he gave us direction. How we can enter into the realm of pure devotional service. So it's not that I can do anything that offers Krishna and it will be alright. No, there are actually some very specific things that Krishna wants me to do, and I have to find out. I have to make an endeavor to find that out. And when I do that as a service to Krishna, then Krishna becomes pleased. Not that I offer Krishna 30 flavors of ice cream, he can pick out the ones he likes, he must like some of them, and I eat them. There was some devotees that used to do that. They used to offer. They had a picture of one initiating spiritual master in our society who ate ice cream. So they offer all the ice cream to him in 7-Up. Even if they weren't directly initiated by him, but at least he became their shiksha guru. They offer everything to him because they knew he'd eat it. Therefore, they felt that that was their connection to Krishna. It was through him for ice cream and 7-Up. Interesting philosophy, but unfortunately, it's not the way it really works. Yes.
Well, you touched on a lot of things here, but Srila Prabhupada had the genius to be able to, fulfill Lord Chaitanya's desire and broaden the scope of Sankirtan, which is the Yuga Dharma. The Yuga Dharma, out of Krishna in his days, that whole thing, Sankirtan. And my understanding, according to Prabhupada's teaching, Sankirtan means the full glorification of God.
Yeah.
Through every human activity, through every resource, through everything in creation, all belongs to Krishna, it should all be given back to him. That's Sankirtan.
Yukta Vairagya.
Yeah.
Yes, within limits, though.
Yes. Well, Prabhupada had the genius to know how to use all creation in Krishna service. Now, the challenge is for us to keep it going in that
purity
direction. Yeah.
Just like it was the road show.
The tricky thing.
The road show, they were chanting Hare Krishna, they were putting on shows, but they were getting up late and they weren't all following the principles. Therefore, Prabhupada stopped it. Although it was very successful in bringing new people to the society, but it didn't help the purities, therefore Prabhupada told them to stop it. So here is a so-called successful preaching activity, but because it was deviating the devotees, Prabhupada didn't want it. So Prabhupada had the transcendental vision to be able to understand what was the parameters by which he utilized Yukta Vairagya, and which wasn't really Yukta Vairagya, but sense gratification.
Since Prabhupada left, he gave us specific comments, but yet he left us with the challenge to engage everything we could in the service.
According to what, first of all, Prabhupada said, if you can't expand what I gave you, at least try and maintain it. So we've created so many new things, we haven't maintained the old ones. Yeah, the old things, like, we've made a philosophy that, books as usual, that was for the old days when people were fanatic, but now we're more sane than the old crazy people came to the society. As far as Gurukul, that doesn't work, any kid who goes to Gurukul is going to get molested, so we've got to send them to the Karmi schools where they can get a pure education. As far as farming, what do you need farming for? You can buy everything at the store. Why waste your time, get your hands dirty farming? Just go to the grocery store. It's cheaper. So we've created philosophies, which make it almost like sinful to follow Prabhupada's program. Or foolish. That's old-fashioned, whatever. And at the same time, we put Prabhupada on the altar, and we do Guru Puja and everything else, thinking that whatever we're doing, Prabhupada is going to sanction. I mean, he may to some extent, it's not that it's gone too crazy yet. But we see that it's not exactly the same focus as it used to be. Although there may be some attempts sometimes to bring back that focus. But nowadays, you know, to live in a, people are discouraged for different reasons, even from living in a temple. If someone wants to move into the temple, you know, why do you want to do such a foolish thing? Why do you want to endanger your devotional activity by moving into a temple, do your devotional service? Why do you want to go out and book this huge and agitate so many people? You know, we want to make our movement popular and you're trying to agitate, you know. You know, as far as Harinam, you know, clanking these beating on these drums and clanking things all the time, it just creates some disturbance, you know, annoys people, you know, going out in these funny clothes, you know, make fools out of the society. Why don't we dress normal, act normal, eat normal, talk normal, and people will love us. Well, these are normal people. They certainly are normal people. The Upper Krishna says, be normal, or we have to take shelter in the process of devotional service. So I think we're going to stop now for a few minutes. Right? And have a break until 10 to 6. Is that alright? Okay. Because we started late today. Yes. Not normal. This is India. You went to Chandi?
And I said, this might have been 40. And he was like blessed with the highest state of consciousness. Mahabhava. Now, manifesting and practicing spiritual vision, seeing Krishna, and it was amazing. And they went on to Chandi and Bhagavad, it was really wonderful.
Yeah. What time did the boys get back?
Well, the bus was around 2:00.
Oh.
We got back there.
Yeah, this will be probably the biggest year. Unless they're going to install more deities for that. Bigger punching out of his
it's like a spiritual event, it's like a mela, but it's like a carnival too, all the little shops and
things. Yeah, it was. Free facade, everyone comes out with their bucket. Take home for the next week.
And there's like 100 stalls that you get.
It's a little commercial.
A lot of people get together
when the
nurses fall.
In the beginning, it wasn't like that. People just came out and we gave a little picture. But then, as we got more into it, then it became a commercial social activity.
There must be some very spiritual benefit that
you
ate the
shard.
That blessing. It has to be
still
happening.
I think Bhagavad Gita gave the blessing. Because I distributed prasadam there for 15 years or something. I still haven't gotten Krishna Prema.
In the right path. In the right connection. But it was
pretty
nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
There was at least 50,000 people. I mean, milling around, half of them in line.
Yeah.
There was tons of people.
Yeah, it's very hard to serve prasadam.
Yeah.
The lines always change all the time. I remember trying to serve prasadam, and it was really a...
And they only do them in batches of about 600-700, but it's going to go on until tonight, so...
Oh, they're still doing it?
Yeah.
One time they were like banner kids, going around with the prasadam, and they said, everybody got that, and they thought it was good. Everybody went, stampede.
There's a double guard. They bring in about 100 people at a time, but there's only about a room of 700.
Yeah.
Eight. Well, maybe 800 or something like that. But But today, being the Constituent is like
true.
It's nice to see how the goal is lining up. You go get the Shahana. And at the beginning, there were more servers than people. Like 100 boys in buckets. Only 100 people.
Hey, take a bucket.
So for a swim, we got
hot kitchen.
Nice. You had your body weight, you were
saying. Please, the Guru, that's also pleasing to Krishna, and you were saying not always. Can you explain?
Well, it depends what you mean by guru, or what you're doing.
The initiating spiritual master.
Well, say the guru gives you the right instruction, but you take it in the wrong way. You're doing it to please the guru, but it's the wrong way. It's the wrong instruction. So will Krishna be pleased?
No, but then guru is not pleased. When the guru is pleased, then Krishna is pleased.
Well, say the say that my point is that if we do something, it can't be just to please the guru, it has to be to please Krishna. But because we know that Krishna is pleased, the guru is pleased. In other words, our philosophy is everything we do is to please Krishna, but we find out how to please Krishna through his representatives. But we can't take Krishna out of the picture. It always has to be Krishna and his devotees.
But it's almost guaranteed, though,
please
the spiritual master, Krishna's
pleased. No, a lot of people are bewildered. They try to please their spiritual master.
Yeah.
But Krishna's not at all pleased. Just like you may be a fanatic disciple, you're doing everything to please your guru, and Krishna is very displeased with what you're doing.
But
you may offend other devotees.
Then the guru will still be pleased either.
Well, if the guru is a neophyte devotee, he may be pleased with what you're doing. He may think, oh, my disciple's so nice, he's so fanatic. He only loves me and no one else. You know, he doesn't show that he's so loyal to me. So Krishna's very displeased by that.
In other words, it's more than a
sentimental
affair, it's deeper than that.
Yeah, the real guru is one who's actually in Brahman, he's in Krishna consciousness. So he's actually a representative of Krishna. He's not doing it, he's a Vyamedya to Krishna. And as Krishna loves everyone. So the Vyamedya acts in such a way as to help instruct the devotee how to properly honor all living entities. I'm not preaching against pizza. That's not the criteria.
Right? And everyone eats and they're all in a good mood and they say, oh, good prasadam, but we don't feel an ecstasy because everyone likes
that. Krishna's pleased all the time. In that sense, you know, you can do any damn thing, Krishna will be pleased. So, you know, anything, you know, you can do anything. If you put, you know, put a little alcohol. I mean, it may be true to a certain extent. If the devotees are happy, Krishna is pleased. But that's not exactly our whole philosophy. If we do something to please Krishna, then supposedly the devotees are pleased, because Krishna is pleased. Not that because the devotees are pleased, you know, therefore it's perfect. even though we left out Krishna out of the picture. No one can be pleased unless Krishna is pleased. So we can't leave Krishna out of the picture in any case. Because we can always supposedly please the devotees by trying to please Krishna.
But otherwise, naturally, if you do something very pleasing to Krishna, all the devotees will be very pleased. And there's some indication that you.
Yeah, I mean, that's our main philosophy. It says that if you're worshiping the deities and a devotee comes, you should stop worshiping the deities and try to please the devotee, greet the devotee. But that idea also doesn't, that's because that's what Krishna wants us to do. So we only do it because that's pleasing to Krishna. Because Krishna's more pleased by our trying to please his devotee. But that doesn't eliminate Krishna from the picture. But there may be many answers. I think it was one devotee said that one time he asked the Prabhupada, said, how do you know if Krishna is pleased or that Krishna is God? And some devotees were saying, because it says in the Bhagavad Gita, that was the Mahaprabhu Maharaj who said that.
Yes.
And then another devotee said, because something like that, right?
But
so many different things. Yeah, so probably one said, because first he said, no, that's not right, because if it happened, it's a feeling. And then the same question was asked some years later, and Prabhupada said, no, that's not right, it's not the happiness, it's because it says it in the Bhagavad Gita. But our point is that if we're actually doing it to please Krishna, and we're remembering Krishna, then we'll be in ecstasy. We'll feel Krishna's reciprocation with us. And if we don't do that, then we're in Maya. Now, how much the devotees are pleased, at least to some extent, we weren't really doing it for Krishna. But if we're doing it to please Krishna, then the result is that we should think of Krishna, and then we'll be in ecstasy by association with Krishna. And if we're really doing it to please the devotees, then we should think of the devotees, but think of the devotees apart from Krishna, that's not possible. Devotee means someone who has a relation with Krishna. So the devotees are always in relation to Krishna. So thinking of the devotees means that we should be thinking how they're related to Krishna, how they're acting to please Krishna, and therefore we should think of Krishna, and by associating with Krishna, we should be in ecstasy, and that's how we know that Krishna is pleased. So if we don't feel Krishna's pleasure, we won't know if Krishna is pleased. Only theoretically, if we're following Krishna's directions through his representatives, then we can get some idea that at least partially we're pleasing Krishna. At least theoretically. But the real practical thing is we feel Krishna's pleasure. That's how we know he's pleased. Yes?
In the main example about pleasing devotees has been surrounding Prasadam, but there's a much better way and more effective way to please devotees is to go for Krishna. So it's like when we hear a really good class, like yourself and many others, it feeds the soul, it satisfies the soul. You know, Divya Jnana, it's enlivening, it's beautiful to hear Krishna's glories. We get so enlivened, you know, so we've had that experience time after time. So that's an even better way of pleasing, you know, the devotees to glorify Krishna. You know, and the more devotees do it together, the better it gets.
You know, somehow or another, we have to feel Krishna's presence.
Yeah.
We have to feel Krishna's happiness. The source of happiness is that Krishna's pleased. No one in the spiritual world is thinking, it doesn't really matter how Krishna feels, it's how Krishna's devotees feel. No, everyone is, within everyone's heart in the spiritual world is Krishna. And they're all endeavoring to please Krishna, that Krishna is happy. And their happiness is Krishna's happiness. So no one does anything without thinking of Krishna's happiness. Even when they're trying to please each other, Krishna is always in the center.
So it's simultaneous.
Yeah, it's always simultaneous.
Like six loving exchanges, one should say that it's pleasing to Krishna when devotees, when I interact with devotees that way, Krishna's pleased with that kind of interaction.
Right, proper interaction, because it's all coming from Krishna. So Krishna's pleasure is pleasure. Without Krishna, without feeling Krishna's happiness, the happiness is always going to be incomplete. There won't be real happiness. Even Radharani, she's never separated from Krishna, just like Krishna is never separated from Srimati Radharani. So We can't have one without the other. Just like you, in this age, you can't have Lord Krishna without Lord Chaitanya. They both have to be there. Gone over that, always glorifying Krishna, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before him, his great soul, they worship Krishna with devotion, perpetually. For Nitya Yukta means in the future, they'll be completely connected with Krishna. Now Krishna is explained, just like in the previous chapter, he explained about persons who worship him and other persons who don't worship him in the seventh chapter. Those who are pious souls, those who are in distress, those who are wanting some security, inquisitive souls, and those who are searching for knowledge of the Absolute. But above them, of course, are the Mahatmas, who are engaged in Ananya Bhakti. So that's the difference between the 7th chapter and the 9th chapter. 7th chapter is ordinary devotees, now we find the Ananya Bhaktis, the Mahatmas. And only practically self-realized, advanced devotees, pure devotional service. They're beyond the material platform. Nishtha begins with that. So they're on a spiritual platform. They don't have some material desire to resist. And now we'll find out there are three other classes of persons. Ananya. Krishna, Anyena, others worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, diverse in many, and in the universal form. Jnana Jagnena Chapyanye, Yajanta Mam Pasate, Ekatvena, Utakvena, Bahuda Vishvato Mukha. Out of the three, the monist is the most prominent, but they're the lowest. And Bahu Ishvaras, who think there are many gods, they're the demigod worshippers that Krishna will explain a little bit later on why it doesn't work, demigod worship. He said previously it doesn't work because their fruits are limited and temporary. Well, if you worship me, you go to my abode. So Krishna will explain about soon that Avidhi Purvakam is just mundane. It's officially worshipping following the Vedas, but not actually following the Vedas. And then Krishna explains, elaborates on the pantheon, the universal form. And he goes into how all these things are actually part of him. That aham trator aham jagnat swaraham aham oshajam mantra aham aham eva jam mahagyam aham agni aham bhutam pitaham asya jagato matadat pitamaha Vedam Pavitram Omkara Riksamayaja Eva Cha Gatira Bhakti Prabhu Shakshi Nivasa Sharanam Shrit Prabhavit Pralaya Stanam Nidanam Vidamavyam Tamaham Ham Barsham Nigriham Kutsri Damisha Amritas Chaiva Mitushcha Sada Satsham Arjuna. That all these different things. I am the fire, the sacrifice. I am the offering, the sacrifice, the clarified butter. I am the father, the mother. All these different things that are approaching us, they're actually Krishna's energies. And they work under Krishna's direction, although they're not directly Krishna, but they're all Krishna's energies. So therefore those who are pantheists, they should understand that all these energies are actually Krishna's. Expansions of Krishna's energy and working in his direction. Then again, he goes back to the demigod worshippers, because he said there's three classes. Now the demigod worshippers, he goes back and says, what's the problem? In contrast to Trayadimam Samapapa Jagnadishva Swargatim Pratariyante Te Punya Sajisarandi Lokam Ashnanti Divyam Divi Deva Bhogan Te Tambukta Swargalokavishalam Chini Punya Marti Lokavishati Evam Trayadaram Anapapanam Kata Kata Kam Kama Lokate. So those who follow the Vedic sacrifices, Trayadimam, the three Vedas, seeking the heavenly planets, they drink the Somarasa to live there. Jagna Ishva Svargatim Pratariyante, Te Punya Asati Suradhi Lokam. They go up to the planet Indra where they enjoy godly delights. But after they use up their pious activities, they fall down to this planet again, to the earthly planet. And there, through this type of Vedic sacrifices, the only result they ultimately get is just repeated birth and death. Then he contrasts it again, because Krishna is always contrasting. He says, this is the material side. And there's another thing, if you become a devotee, he says, Anantis chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate, te pi mam hevan kunteya nityuto pasate. Actually, Yoga Shema Mahamiha. Anantis chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate, to those who are Ananya Bhaktis, who are always meditating upon Krishna and serving Him, then Krishna carries what they lack and preserves what they have. We've heard that story of Jamunacharya, who read this. He thought, how is it that Krishna is going to personally come, go out of His way just to serve His devotees? Why should He burden Himself? He crossed it out. And he wrote, instead of Vihami, I carry, he wrote something else. You know, I have someone bring. I have an order through the internet or something.
Yeah.
And then he went and he came back very shortly, and his wife saw two little boys after he went away, crossed their whole bodies with crosses on them. One blackish little boy, one whitish little boy. Very beautiful little boys who were carrying all kinds of voga. And they said that the Acharya told us to bring these things. And they had, he had beaten us, he had scratched us with his pen or whatever else, he scratched us. And she said, oh, the Acharya has become so cruel, he's molesting little children now like this, abusing them. And they left even before they could take prasad. She cooked the prasad. And she asked, the Acharya came back and asked where all this nice food has come from. And she said, oh, you don't know? You met these two little boys and you gave them all this food and you scratched their bodies up. And they said that they were afraid of the Acharya and they left before you came here. And then he saw that actually these two boys were Krishna Balaram, and that they had personally come to bring him the offering, this boga, to demonstrate that actually the Hanuman, that they would personally come and bring what they would, their pure devotees lack. So this is Krishna, Vihamiham. He personally comes and gives, because not that it's a burden for Krishna, but Krishna likes to do that. He likes to serve his devotees. That's Krishna's pleasure. One of Krishna's opulences is renunciation. So although he has unlimited other opulences like wealth, and beauty, and strength, but he utilizes them simply in the service of his devotees. He's not attached to utilizing it for his own happiness. He simply utilizes it to please his devotees. So that's renunciation. That Krishna is a better devotee of his devotees than his devotees were devoting his. Therefore, Krishna comes here to become a devotee, and we come here to become God. God comes here to become a devotee, and we come here to become God. That's the difference. And now, as a further contrast, Krishna again goes back to the demigod worshippers. He says, Tepi Devi Jana, what is that?
Yeti
Anita Bhakta, Ijanti Ishari Anvita, Tengimam Evakantia, Ijanti Anthony Purvaka, Ahamji Sarva Jagnana, Bhokta Cha, Prabhu Evacha, the Tumam Abhijana, Dita Vena Tasta Yankita. That I am the only object of sacrifices. Yeti Anvita Devata Bhakta, that those perform these service, these activities out of devotion. They're actually worshiping me, but they're doing it in the wrong way. And I'm the actual enjoyer of the sacrifice. But if they don't understand it, then they fall down. Worshiping the demigods is actually, one is supposed to see Krishna. Just like Bhart Maharaj, he also worshiped the demigods, but he understood that the demigods were devotees of Krishna, therefore he worshiped the demigods to please Krishna. His worship is correct. But those who worship the demigods for personal sense gratification, that's called a Vidhi Purvakam, and what they'll achieve, they may get some benefit from the demigods, but ultimately they'll just give birth and death, they'll fall down. They won't get the spiritual platform of consciousness. Yanti deva prata deva prati yanti tri vrataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mahyatino. We can have this material world as like one big playground. The Vedas will explain to us how to get the different fruits of the tree. But as long as we're attached to the fruits, then we have to enjoy the illusory fruits, because they're not real. But if we're attached to the fruits of the tree, then the result is that we'll have to enjoy illusory fruits. But if we become attached to Krishna, then we can go back to Krishna and enjoy the real world, the real fruits. And what is it become attached to Krishna? What do we have to do to Krishna? We have to perform elaborate sacrifices. Do we have to give elaborately in charity? Do we have to perform great sacrifices, austerities? No, Krishna says, Padram Pushpam Palam Toyam, Yome Bhakti Priyatati, Tadaham Bhakti Parijama, Ashnami Priyatatmanaha. If you have nothing else, just offer me a leaf or fruits and flowers and water. If it's offered with bhakti, then I accept it. So the real thing is bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada was installing Rukmini Dwarkadish, or she was Rukmini Dwarkanath, then he gave a story of Madan Mohan. As we know that Madan Mohan, he was a deity who was living in the house of one Brahmin in Vrindavan. And the Brahmin was treating Madan Mohan just like one of his children. But when Sanatana Goswami was visiting the Brahmin's house doing madhukari, going door to door begging, then Madan Mohan noticed Sanatana Goswami and requested the Brahmin to let him live with Sanatana Goswami. Because the deity said that he has so many children, but he has no one, so let me live with him. So the Brahmin said, alright, you can go and live with him. But Sanatana Goswami had no place to live, he was living underneath the tree. And the Brahmin, Sanatana Goswami put Madan Mohan underneath the tree, on a tree branch, actually. And every day he would go and offer him one or two rotis, which means he'd take some dough and throw it into the fire until it would cook, and that's what he'd offer. And one day Madan Mohan became very disturbed and said, my dearest Sanatana Goswami, every day you're offering me just one dry roti, can't you give me at least some salt? And Sanatana Goswami said, I'm an old man, I can't hardly move. What can I do? Kindly accept. Now you're asking for a roti, for some salt. On the roti next you'll ask for some sweets. What am I going to be able to do for you? Just don't complain so much. The Prabhupada said, Madan Mohan had to accept because he was being offered with love by Sanatana Goswami. Confirmed. Therefore, the real thing is bhakti. That Prabhupada was saying is deity installation. But what is your value? And what is the value of the things that you have? It is nothing. That the real thing is bhakti, devotion. That Krishna kindly accepts, I have no qualification, I'm rotten and I'm fallen, but I brought this to you. And then Prabhupada started to cry. that will do. Don't be puffed up. Always remember that you're dealing with Krishna. That is my advice to you. Thank you. So the real thing is bhakti, the attitude of devotion. Not that we're bringing Krishna some opulent prasadam, fruity halava, Prabhupada said. Because it has some raisins in it, Krishna's sure to take it. Because he really likes raisins. And as long as we put raisins on it, and then he's satisfied. No, it's the attitude of offering. Krishna has no need for anything. He already owns everything. What he's hungry for is the love of his devotee, is the mood of devotion. Without that mood, we have nothing to offer to Krishna. The other example is Duryodhana. He decided that he'd trick Krishna into siding with him. Somadatta, Puritrava, he was coming to with his army of one Akshahini division of soldiers on the side of Yudhisthira Maharaj. But on the way, Duryodhana arranged very nice accommodations for the soldiers, nice entertainment, nice food. And this way, after many days, Puritrava declared that, thinking that this must be Yudhisthira Maharaj who's making all this arrangement, that whoever's making all these nice arrangements for me, I want to give them some benediction. And then Duryodhana appeared and said, "Yes, it's me. I want a benediction. You join my side of the battle." So Duryodhana was very clever like that. And he thought he'd be able to bribe Krishna. So he was going to offer Krishna nice food, nice place to stay. When Krishna was coming for a peace offering for the Kauravas on the part of the Pandavas. But Krishna wouldn't accept anything. And of course we know that Duryodhana tried to kill Krishna, he tried to imprison him. Krishna was sitting on his chair, he pushed some lever, Krishna fell into the earth. He thought, now we've gotten rid of him, and then Krishna came out as a universal form. In any case, Krishna left unimpressed by Duryodhana, and he went to the house of Vidura. And there Vidura was so ecstatic to see Krishna, he was peeling bananas and offering Krishna the banana peel and throwing the banana away. But because it was being offered with devotion, Krishna ate the banana peels in great ecstasy. Until finally Vidura realized what he was doing and started offering Krishna bananas instead of the peel. But Krishna accepted it because it was offered with devotion. Or the story of Rahugana. His father was Mukunda. And Rahugana was very only 5 years old or so. Mukunda decided to let Rahugana offer to the deity of Gopal, Bala Gopal, the prasad. And he instructed him how to do it. And then he left to do some business. Rahugana put the bog on the altar, made the offering, and thought that Gopal hadn't eaten the offering because it was still there. So he said, "My father asked me to make the offering and asked that you should eat. But you haven't eaten anything, so please eat." But still nothing happened. So then he became very disturbed and he started to cry, "Please eat the food." And so Gopal was so obliged by the love of his servant, he got off the altar and ate the offer. Mukunda came back and saw the plate was empty and asked Raghunanda, "Where is the prasad?" He said, "Well, the deity ate it." His father said, "Oh, sure, right." "No, really, I offered to him, he wouldn't eat it, and then finally I started crying, he came off the altar and ate it." Mukunda was a little doubtful, but he decided to test it again, and therefore he gave the same service, Raghunanda to offer again some prasada, some bhoga. So he's offering the prasada, and Mukunda hid behind the window to see what was happening. And again, nothing happened, seemingly. and Raghunanda started to cry. You know, yesterday you came off and ate the offering, but now you're not accepting, etc. So when Gopala Gopal saw that Raghunanda was crying, he came off the altar and began to eat the prasadam again. Mukunda was quite surprised to see the deity eating the prasad. And then the deity saw Mukunda and stopped eating, went back on the altar. Just left half a ladu there. Because I'm sure Mukunda came in to get the ladu. The deity had personally eaten half. In other words, it's the attitude of devotion that Krishna accepts. But if we don't have that attitude, then Krishna says that yat karoshira yanashnati yashahosi vidati syat yat tapasi kundaya tat krusha vinarpana. Now whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that we perform, should be done as an offering to me. So we can do our activities as an offering to Krishna, give him the fruit. The essence really is love, but we can offer the fruit also to Krishna. And then what is the result of that? Shubha Shubha Pulahiva Moksha Sekara Bandanai Sanyasa Yoga Yukdharma Vimukta Mama Pashiti. By this principle of renunciation, Krishna says, Shubha Shubha Pulahiva, I'm giving me the fruit that you'll become liberated and you'll come to me. So by this type of activity also, we'll become purified and eventually we'll become Krishna conscious. We'll come to the platform of real devotion. Samaham sarvuteshu name dveshtosti na priyaha yeva jantikumam bhatya maite teshu chapyaha. That I envy no one nor am I partial to anyone. This is the verse in the fourth chapter. Yeyatamam prapadyaya. Krishna reciprocates with ordinary persons according to their activities. But to the devotees, yeme bhaktikumam bhatya maite teshu chapyaha. But Krishna has a special relationship devotees. For them, he is very dear to the devotees, and the devotees are very dear to him. Krishna is in the devotee, and the devotee is always in Krishna. So for the devotees, it's a special relationship. So this is the answer to the idea that we may do our services as a duty, offering Krishna the result, and that will bring us to the platform of eventually real love for Krishna. Actually, whatever we do will be done simply as an offering out of love for Krishna. It won't be so important what we're doing. What will be important is that Krishna is pleased by it. But what about the persons, the devotees, who are seemingly devotees, but they're not very advanced, they're not very pure in their activities. Sometimes they may commit something. They may fall down. So what is their position? Krishna says, Apiket Sidharashara Vajante Mamananyava Sadhuriva Samantabyak Samyagravyasti Togisaha Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma Shazak Shanti Nigashiti Kondiana Prajanahi Kondiana Pratijanahi Name Bhat Pranashati. That even if one is Apiket Sidharashara, if one is engaged in seemingly or in activities which are not so devotional, apichet su dharashiro, su, very bad activities. Vajate mamananyabhaka, but he's an anyabhaka, he's consistently engaged in devotional service, then apichet su dharashiro, vajate mamananyabhaka, sadora eva samantavya. He must be considered righteous because he's properly situated. One time a thief became a devotee and he couldn't give up his desire to steal. But he decided to simply rearrange everyone's belongings. So although he didn't steal anything, still he kind of utilized his propensity. And that way after everyone's belongings got mixed up, everyone thought the other person had stolen it. He became very disturbed. Why do you take my things? Well, why do you take my things? And then the thief stood up, the former thief who became a devotee, and said, actually, I didn't, you know, what I did is I'm formerly a thief, I can't give it up, I couldn't give it up so easily. Therefore, I utilize my propensity by just mixing everyone's belongings up. So please forgive my offense. Or we have the example of, which is not the best example, of Ramanujacharya. He engaged some persons with mystic powers, because the people at that time, they wouldn't give any donation to build the Sri Rangam. Therefore, he employed some persons with mystic powers to collect donations. One of them could open any lock, the other one could walk, could levitate, the other one could, what was the other one? Three of them. One could pick any lock, another one could levitate, another one could disappear. So they collected quite a bit of money and engaged in the devotional service of Krishna. Of course, later on Ramanujacharya thought it would be a disturbance because they couldn't give up their propensities. So he had one of them bring them all out to a boat in the middle of the water, all these different thieves, and he sunk the boat. Yeah. The person who could walk on water, could levitate, sunk the boat, walked away. That was the end of the thieves.
What about the person who could levitate?
No, he was alright.
That is Tirumangai Kalwa, I think, not Ramanujacharya.
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to engage some thieves to build the temple as well. Part of the wall around the temple or something?
Yeah, the wall.
Some thieves. He said you can steal and get the money to build the wall.
Yeah. Something like that. We don't recommend that. You may wind up in a boat in the middle of the river. Yeah. And what about it? And then Krishna says, oh, there is also Mami Partha Vipashitya Yepi Supapionaya Sriya Vaisha Sita Sudras Tepiyanti Parangatim. The women, the Shudras, the Vaishyas, they can also, if they're engaged in my service, they can come back to the spiritual world. It doesn't matter exactly what our material position is if we have the intelligence to engage in Ananya Bhakti, take shelter of the spiritual energy of Krishna. And then Krishna says, Kim Punar Brahmana Punyas Bhakti Rajarshya Sita Anityama Sukham Lokam Kim Punar Anitya Sukalokam Imam Prapya Vajas Brahman. Well, how much great, what to speak of the kings, the Brahmins, the saintly persons that engage my devotional service and then you can come to me. So certainly. Because it's expected that persons who are more advanced, it's expected that they'll be able to more easily understand the value of pure devotional service. And what is that pure devotional service? Man mana bhava mad bhakto, mad yaji mam namaskru, mam mai vaishasi yuktaivam atmaram matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of it. So by hearing about Krishna, trying to see things in relation to Krishna, understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then we'll be able to think of Krishna. And then if we think of Krishna in the right way, then naturally we'll become devoted to Krishna. We'll want to follow his instructions. We'll want to engage in devotional service. That's what a devotee means. Utilize his energies as an offering to him. And that way we'll be able to worship him. And by worshiping him in the proper mood, we'll realize how wonderful Krishna is and we'll surrender to him. We'll bow down before him. Actually surrender. That's the process. By hearing, seeing, understanding things properly, engaging in unalloyed service, surrendering to Krishna, then we wind up becoming completely absorbed in him. And then we'll go to him. We'll go back to Krishna. We'll be with him. Always, even in this lifetime, even now, in a moment, can take place. Probably said it's simply a question of understanding and accepting the fact. Any questions about this? So basically, the ninth chapter is very similar to the seventh chapter. Demigod worship was talked about, pure devotees were talked about, the hearing about Krishna, very a lot of parallels between the 7th and 9th. But in the 7th chapter, ordinary devotional service is mentioned. And here, unalloyed devotional service is mentioned. And the value of unalloyed devotional service over just ordinary devotional service. Yes?
It seems that in chapter 9, Krishna expresses his affection for the verses for devotees. He cares what we lack, because we really have, even if it's there's a bubble that to me, I still consider standing. And just seems a lot nicer than chapter 7.
Yeah. Now, chapter 10, Krishna is talking about thinking about him, becoming, seeing everything in relation to him, developing that vision. And the 10th, he'll give us some practical examples of how we can think of him. It begins with Vuyeva Mahavaho, Shino Me Paramam Vachaha, Pateham Priyamanaya, Vyashmi Vita Kamiya. Now I'll explain to you something more practical, or which he says here, better knowledge. Yomam Ajamanadinja, Veti Log Maheshram, Sambhu Dhamasukmarte Shu Sarapapa Mojite. One who knows me is the unborn, is that the next one?
The man of
the demigods know me on my origins. This is the first word?
Neither.
Name me Vidu Suragana, Pravanyaha Maharshaya. Aham Adhiri Devanam Maharshanam Chasarvishaha. That Krishna came before everyone, so no one can really know him. From everyone's born after Krishna. And the host of the demigods of the great city is now my origin. Because in every sense I'm their source. So Krishna is introducing himself as the source of everything. There's no one above Krishna, everything is coming from him. Whatever we see is not due to the mercy of any demigod. Everything is due to Krishna's mercy. And he says, one who knows me is Ayan born, Yomam Ajam Anadim, is the Yomam Ajam, as the unborn. What is the translation?
He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, the only undiluted among men is free from us.
Now we'll explain how different things come from him. It's very similar to the other chapter too. Krishna had explained about how he was the fire and the sacrifice, or fire and the sacrifice of butter. In the previous one he said he was the smell, he's the aroma from the earth, the light and all the luminous objects, etc. Now again Krishna will explain something about how all things come from him, including some of the qualities. I think we begin to this is the first word, Buddha.
Buddha
Gyanava Samoga, Shema Sattva Dhamashma, Sukaduka, Bhavo Bhavo, Vayam Chabayam Evacha, Ahimsa Samatha Tushti, Sukto Dhanam Yusho Yusha, Matakeva Pritagva Pida, Bhavanti Sarabhutanam, Matakeva Pritagva Pida. So now, Krishna again, he says the same thing. Very similar parallel between all these different chapters. Intelligence is coming from him, buddha jnanam, knowledge, asamudha, freedom from delusion or doubt, shema, forgiveness, dhamma, sense and mind control. All these things come from Krishna. And including Maharshi Asatapurve, Chaturamana Vaskata, Madhava Sarabhutana. Maharshi Asatapurve Chaturamana Vasata. Is that right? Maharshi Asatapurve Chaturamana Vasata. Madhavasarabhutana Manasajata Yesham Loki Mahapraja. That all the great sages, four Kumaras, the different Prajapatis, they all come from him. And Etam Vibhutim Yogam Cha Mama Yoga Veti Tatvataha. Savikapena Yudhjena, Yudhjena Yoga, Yudhjena Natra Samshayaha. that one who knows in truth this glory and power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. So now we have the four principal verses, four nutshell verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhava matat sarvam pravartate iti mata bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. When we understand that everything we see and everything we don't see comes from Krishna, then we develop bhava towards Krishna. When we see Krishna everywhere, and we actually begin to realize that everything comes from Krishna, everything is Krishna's benediction, and everything that Krishna does is good, that Krishna is all good, therefore everything is good, we see Krishna everywhere, then our love for Krishna develops. We see how wonderful Krishna is. Everything is His energy, and everything is wonderful, and He's the source of all of it, therefore we develop love for Krishna. Just like now we're attracted by persons who are beautiful or intelligent or wealthy or whatever. But if when we realize Krishna is the source of all this, then He becomes the most attractive. We whatever feelings we have, attraction or appreciation, they all flow towards Krishna. And we can understand that in the association with devotees. Much chita much kata prana, bodhi antas parashram, kadayantatramam yam tu shanti chara mantija. In the association of devotees who have understood Krishna or experienced Him, we develop some attraction towards Krishna also. Krishna becomes revealed to us through the words of His devotees. Krishna empowers the words of His devotees so that they reveal the truth. And in the beginning, the devotees instruct us how to engage in Krishna's service, and we become satisfied by that service. We develop some appreciation for utilizing our energies in Krishna's service. And then at the mature stage, we become absorbed in love for Krishna, always meditating and thinking about Him. That's the first one is tushanti, we become satisfied by our service, and then ramanti, we become ecstatic in that service, always associated with Krishna through thinking of Him, through lila smarana. And when we hear about Krishna, we hear about the process of devotional service, we learn how to perform devotional service, and we execute it, then kesham sadatam yukdanam vajantam pritipurvakam tadanam buddhiyogamtam yena mamu piyantite. As we become more serious, more enthusiastic, more loving, then Krishna gives us more and more intelligence, how to become more serious, how to become more loving, more engaged, in a more enthusiastic way. And as Krishna sees our determination and our appreciation, then Kesham Eva Nukampara Mahamagana Janta Maha Nasham Yam Yam Avalashto Yanavipana Bhastada. Out of compassion, Krishna is one with our heart to strive with the shining lamp of knowledge of darkness born of ignorance. Whereas Prabhupada writes in the purport that we begin to see how Krishna is everywhere. And Krishna will give us whatever we need automatically as the heart becomes purified. Then Krishna supplies everything the devotee needs without any effort. And the devotee becomes completely happy in association with Krishna. He sees Krishna is everywhere. He sees the hand of Krishna in everything. He sees Krishna is reciprocating with him, and whatever he lacks or needs, Krishna automatically provides. Therefore, the devotee becomes completely happy in Krishna consciousness. So those are the four nutshell verses. And the rest of the chapter deals with Krishna's opulences, how we can see Krishna within this material nature as things which are significant. But then Arjuna says, from Arjuna Vacha, Param dhamma param bhavam pavitram paramam bhavam purusham shatitam divyam adi deva majam vibhum ahustvam rishya sarade deva shiranaradas tatha asito devala vyasa svayam chadvivishinam. That you are the supreme abode, the supreme purifier, as he said, Param brahma param dhamma pavitram purifier paramam bhavam purusham Shastatam Divyam, the eternal divine person, Adi Devam, the original Ajam Vibhum, unborn personality. And all the great sages such as Asita, Devala, Vyasa, and Narada, they all just declare this about you. So now Arjuna is declaring that everything Krishna said was true. But he wants to see it directly. He wants to see something. He wants Krishna to show him some objects. So he says, how can I meditate on you? You said I'm supposed to think of you, but how am I supposed to think about you? So Krishna says, Evame tadya tadya tvam atmanam parameshwaram drastamishmi. Oh, that's the next verse. What's the next verse? Svayam evatmanam sarvam ekam ritan manye yanman vadasi keshva vitute bhagavan vyati vidur devana janava. That now the host of demigods of the great sage or something. They told me that neither of them got the status can understand you. Because we'll find out the only way we can understand Krishna is by devotion. So just by being a demigod or a sage, that doesn't mean we can understand Krishna. Only through unalloyed devotion. Svayam evatmanam, atmanam parameshwaram, drasami chumi te rupam. Sayam Evatmanatmana, Sulam Bhushasma, Bhutbhavan Bhuteshu, Deva Deva Jagatate. Now, Arjuna is calling Krishna, he's the Lord of Laws, the God of God, the controller of everything, etc. Now, Arjuna asks, how can I meditate upon you? What different ways I can think of you? And then Krishna starts to tell Arjuna, you can think of me as a hum. Atma Gudakesha, I am the super soul in everyone's heart. Sarabhutesha Titaha. Ahamadhistamajamcha Buddhano Anta Evacha. I am the beginning and the end of all things. And so many things Krishna will tell Arjuna. That I am Adityanam Aham Vishnura Jyotisava Aviram Sama Naratam Naratam Chasmi Nakshatra Nam Aham Shashi. That I am the other Adityas, I am the sun god, Adityanaham Vishnur Jyotisam Rav Amsamam. And the light luminous in the sun. Adityanaham Vishnur Jyotisam Rav Amsamam. Maratam, Maratam Chasniya, the Maras, I'm a Rishi. And of the lights, I am the radiant moon. So many different things Krishna explained. We don't have to go all the different vibhutis. So many vibhutis Krishna has explained in this chapter. Prahlad Maharaj, the shark, Vada Pravatamasmi, the beginning, middle, the end of all things. I am of women, or feminine Sanskrit words. I am memory, patience. I am the spring, flower bearing spring. I am the Gayatri mantra. I am Mantra Pandavas, I am Arjuna, of the sages, I am Yas, I am the thinkers, I am Sukracharya, I am the rod of chastisement. So many vibhutis, Krishna says. And then he says, Yad yad vibhuti mad sattvam, shrimad orjitam evava, tattam evava gachetvam amate jamsasambhava. But what need is all for these detailed explanations? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire creation. Yad yad vibhuti man sattvam, ataiva bhavanai tena, kim yas tena tva arjuna, kishtavya hamidam krishnam ekam shena sviddho jagat. That ataiva, with a single fragment of myself, I'm pervading and supporting this entire creation. Know that all glorious, mighty creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. But what need is there for all this detailed knowledge, Arjuna? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire creation. So Krishna is so great, that's all we're seeing is Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna. So imagine how great Krishna is. If this is just Krishna's energies we're seeing, but it's expanded from him, a little fragment of himself is the whole universe, or the universe is. Imagine what Krishna is like. Very hard to imagine what Krishna is like. But then when we hear the descriptions, as we heard in the Bhagavatam class, the Krishna wanted to be walking, that all living entities would be stunned in ecstasy. The rocks would start to flow like liquid, and the river Jamuna would become solid. That the birds would become trapped, because the river Jamuna became solid. The birds that were there, their feet would get trapped in the water. They couldn't move. And this is possible, because anyone who's the source of everything must be amazing. Any questions? Yes.
How is it possible that somebody can be a devotee and at the same time come to all the activities that Krishna described? Even like you said in that verse, the most abominable activity.
Well, just like a Krura, how did he wind up being in conspiracy to steal the Shaman capital? He's involved in a murder. He's cursed. Well, anyhow, he got involved in quite a few things. He encouraged Stan Madanya to steal the jewel, and after he stole the jewel, he didn't want to have anything to do with it. Stan Madanya wound up murdering Krishna's own father-in-law. Then he got murdered by Krishna himself, and the Krura took the jewel. How did he get involved in all this? Wasn't he a devotee? Yeah, so even when we find that Krishna's passing, sometimes happens like that. Kritavarma became involved. Sometimes it happens like that. Yeah.
I heard the story today. Sorry. Hard to understand, but about Rama Harshavani, how he didn't uproot with Balaram's pet. So what, Balaram killed him with a blade of grass?
Yeah.
So wasn't he a devotee?
No.
He wasn't?
No. He had to be devoted to Krishna. Yeah. He didn't, that was his problem. He didn't show any respect to Balaram. Mm. He wasn't a devotee.
I thought he was a devotee.
Not a very good one. Yes.
In chapter 9, text 2, Ajay Vidyavaja Guyam saying that this is the king of knowledge, king of education. But in chapter 10, it says that Slume Parmamacha, it says to what extent here, it says to what is the translation, giving knowledge that is better than what I already explained.
Yes. But so Krishna already explained that he's God. Yes. Now Krishna will show how he is God. Same knowledge, but just a little bit more direct, something that we, at least for us, we may hear theoretically Krishna's God, but when we hear that he is actually the light and the radiant sun, he's the beginning, middle, and the end of all beings, he's the super soul in the heart, and we think things, he's the Himalayas, things that we have some direct perception of, we can think, oh, that's Krishna. That's why it's better. It's the same knowledge, but just presented in a way that may be more appreciable to us, more practical that we can apply. What time is it actually? Everyone has a different time here. What's that? 5 to 7. 5 to 7. That's the deity time. This is 10 minutes early. 5 minutes early. So we can chant for 5 minutes.